Every day, the choices we make create our imprint, the mark we leave through our life and on the world. I'm Natalie Walton, and this podcast is for you if you want to make better decisions in your daily life, from how you create and run your home to building a meaningful business and life that you love. If you're interested in living more intentionally and responsibly, come join me and leading creatives, entrepreneurs, and experts every week. Together, let's create an imprint worth leaving. Would you love to design and decorate your dream home but feel completely overwhelmed by all of the choices, the steps to take, and how to bring it all together? Of course, you know that you want to create a home that you love, one that helps you to live your best life, and you want to get it right. After all, your home is one of your biggest and best investments. I've got something just for you this week only. It's a free training called The 3 Steps You Must Take to Design Your Home. Once you understand these 3 steps, and they're not what you might think, you will be able to design and decorate with clarity and confidence and actually know the best place to start designing, what you should really buy, and how to make it all come together beautifully while still working within your budget. So what are you waiting for? This is the simple process that you've been waiting for. Don't miss out. It's this week only. Go to nataliewalton.com/3 steps to design your home and check out this incredible free training. That's nataliewalton.com/3 steps to design your home. And in case you didn't quite catch it, I'm going to say it one last time. nataliewalton.com/3 steps to design your home. Hello everyone, I hope that you're all well. Today I'm excited to share an interview with Mariah Burton, who is an interior designer and has a studio called Folk Studio with her business partner and design partner, Chris. Now, I was captivated by Mariah's designs when I recently discovered them. And as I started to dig a little bit deeper onto the work that she's created and her process, I was also taken by how she uses sustainable principles in her work and also really tries to work within people's needs and their existing spaces. So she's got a great video on her website of how she designed a small space. And I encourage you to watch that. She talks about that in this interview. And I also really love hearing about her own story to how she came to become an interior designer. Because for some of you who might love creating homes and think that this is something that you want to do, she really steps through the process to how she became an interior designer. It can sometimes feel a little bit overwhelming, and how can you break into the industry? Well, she shares all of that. So I hope that you enjoy this interview, and I will connect again with you soon. Hi, Mariah. Thank you so much for joining me today on the podcast. I'm very excited to hear about your journey into creating interiors. I kind of got immersed in your website recently, looking at your different projects, and was watching that little video on your Chippendale project that you worked on, and just loved the ideas that you had in terms of designing a small space and using sustainable materials where you can as well. So I thought we could talk about all things design today. But I want to kind of start at the beginning of your journey, because I'm always fascinated to learn where people start. Like, were you always creative, or what was your journey to becoming a creative person?
Well, thanks for having me as well. I have always been a pretty creative person. I think growing up, we didn't really have much, so we had to become quite resourceful. And my mum is a really creative person, so she would always find things on the side of the road to repurpose. A lot of the time it was furniture, and she kind of encouraged us to see beauty in things that a lot of people don't see beauty in. And so we were quite creative kids. There was always projects happening at our house.
Yeah. And did you grow up in Sydney? Is that where you grew up?
Yeah. I was actually born in California. So my mum's Australian and my dad's African American. And so we moved here when I was about 3. So been here forever.
Yeah. No, great. Yeah. And so then at what point did you start to get a sense that you wanted to work in interiors?
Yeah, I think I was about 7. So my mum often tells me these stories, and I do remember it, but I would often wake up in the middle of the night and rearrange my room. And my room was my sanctuary. I was obsessed with changing things. At one point, I convinced my mum to paint all my walls with chalkboard paint, and painting the floors with concrete paint. And I had bright green floors, and I just loved creating and waking up to new spaces. So I knew I loved design from about seven. And I wasn't 100% sure if I was going to go into it, but I knew I had a knack for it.
Yeah. And then I guess then your journey, sort of you going through high school, and did you really know then that you wanted to study interior design, or what was your journey kind of making that transition from those later high school years to then sort of studying?
Yeah, so it was a funny story. I played basketball at a really high level my whole life. And I was really conflicted whether I wanted to be an interior designer or a basketball player, which are very two different things. And so I would, you know, I kind of dabbled with the idea of doing both, you know, as a 16-year-old thinks, you know, is possible. And I decided at about 17 that I would do interior design. But I just wasn't sure when. And really, I got a scholarship to a design school straight after high school. And so I just kind of decided, well, look, I've been given this opportunity, I may as well start. And then I've never looked back.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's interesting. I think a lot of people can probably relate to that, you know, you when you're in those younger years, I think there can often be two sides to your personality or two sides to like your interests, and to feel torn and having to make that decision. But well, it seems like it served you well, your decision. So not to say that you want to become a kind of an amazing basketballer as well, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm definitely glad I chose interior design.
Yeah. And so then I was reading about how, so you went to Billy Blue, is this right? And then you were sort of saying on your website about that you went to New York as a design representative for the World Business Forum. Can you just talk a little bit about that and how that opportunity came about?
Yeah, so I'll start just with Billy Blue. Basically, I did a diploma and then I decided I wanted to do a bachelor degree. So I studied my bachelor, and then when I was just about to finish graduating, this opportunity came up to become a design representative basically for the school. I think at this point I was just about to graduate. So I went over to New York and it was an amazing experience. I got to meet some of the world's best designers, entrepreneurs, and just talk all things design. And it was incredible. I was there for about 5 weeks. The forum only went for a few days, but there was a lot of interviews and opportunities to interview the people that spoke as well after that. So that really opened my eyes to the world of design and where I could go with it.
Okay. And so then what? Like, you know, you finish your studies as most people do, and then you have to kind of go out and get a job. So how did that, or did you start your own practice straight away, or did you work for other practices?
I worked for so many different practices after school. I had my eyes set on a few, and like everybody, I interned for years. So I did this on and off, and I interned for some of the best studios in Sydney and loved being around amazing designers all the time. But basically it was kind of like 8 to 9 hours of cleaning out the studio fridge and dusting the samples, and I was so happy to do that. But I remember thinking to myself, surely, you know, I don't have to be interning and doing these things for years. You know, I know I've got a lot of skill here, and how can I showcase that? And so it made me really rethink my path and how I was going to get to, I guess, one day having my own studio. So then I actually worked for, I was offered a lot of jobs at that time after becoming an intern, and it's really unheard of and crazy to think of now, but I turned them all down and I said, you know, none of them really aligned with my ethos and who I was. And I knew that was going to be really hard to find, but I was determined to find it. And then I got a job at Koskela, just a sustainable furniture brand, and it was really my dream job, and I became their in-house interior designer. and I worked there for years. And that's kind of on right after that is when kind of folk began.
Yeah. Oh, that's, I didn't realize that. And yeah, I can really see, yeah, like now that you've said that, I can see the thread of your style and how it's kind of aligned with their style, how the, it makes, yeah, sense that you work there. And yeah, so I guess what were, you said this ethos that you had. So what was that? What was important to you that you decided, no, I don't want to work for these other studios? What was the kind of the burning passion within, yeah, you?
I felt like a lot of the studios I was working at were kind of just producing work with no passion. There was a really a lack of understanding in terms of sustainability. And the, it just never felt right. I think the lack of passion for design and seeing design as more of a, I guess, a tool to enhance your mental and physical well-being rather than just produce spaces and get the most profit from that. And I just always felt like people were designing for money. And I just, it never sat well with me. So I really wanted to focus on slow design, sustainable design, and yeah, just have a company that really aligned with me personally rather than just seeking something for, you know, be able to say on your LinkedIn profile that you worked for that company.
Yeah. And so why do you think that this was an issue that was important for you? Was there a particular journey that you had been on to kind of, I guess, become attuned and awakened to sustainability and that as an issue?
There was a particularly a moment that kind of changed for me. It's always been part of who I am. And again, I guess it goes back to being really resourceful and living a really sustainable life. But it's really big. It's a really big topic in my household. And as a child, it was really ingrained in me. So it's just been a part of who I am. And I'm pretty strong, I guess, in terms of those personality traits and the things that I believe in, and I won't compromise.
Yeah. Okay. So what was that time then working at Koskela like? So were you working on like commercial projects, doing sort of, because I know that they've got a lot of commercial clients, don't they? So was it helping them?
Yeah, they do. No, I actually wasn't in the commercial division at all. It was a new role when I started, and it was just looking after residential projects. So it was an amazing experience. I got to design a lot of custom furniture, new ranges, and it really, I guess, sparked my love for furniture design as well. And it taught me a lot about sustainable design and sustainable practices. And I couldn't believe I had this job. You know, I guess it was somewhat only a few years after graduating. I think I was probably 3 years after graduating, and I was the youngest person on the team, and I really grew my knowledge of design and my love for design whilst being there.
Okay. And what were some of those big lessons that you learnt about sustainability and sustainable design during that time? Can you share any of those?
Yeah. I think one of the biggest one was utilizing the makers that we have here, eliminating transport, using sustainable materiality. And it's not always the easy route. A lot of the time it's the harder route to find those materiality that works and the right makers and their process, understanding that. And even though it might be longer, the practice of sustainability has been implemented, and understanding that and appreciating that.
Yeah, that's so true. And so then you said that you formed Folk Studio. Was that after working at Koskela? Like, was there a bit of a crossover period as well where you were kind of slowly building that up? Can you share that journey?
Yeah, definitely. My colleague Chris, he worked at Koskela as well in a different role. He has a background in urban planning and graphic design and interior design. And we both had a really a shared belief and passion for design. And so while we were working there, we kind of started thinking about Folk. I mean, it wasn't called Folk then. It was just this mysterious company that we were going to create. And we would talk about it every day and get really excited. And so it was probably about a year before we left and actually decided to take the plunge. And we had come up with Folk probably 6 months before we left. The name, everything was there, the branding, the website. And then we launched it as soon as we left, and it was definitely scary. Being the control freak I am, it was, you know, I don't like to take huge risks. So, we did, and it's definitely paid off.
And so who was your first client, and how did you find that client? Because this is something that I hear a lot from my students in my courses, and, you know, it's getting that first try, you know, like getting that first opportunity. Yeah. How did that come about?
I'm still working with this client amazingly, and I absolutely love her. But she, when I was working at Costskeller, she'd come in to buy some art and wanted some rugs and some decorative pieces for her home. And I remember we had a few conversations, and I went to her house once, and we did a little bit of decorating for her. And she lived really close to me, and we actually just bumped into each other one day. And she said, you know, what are you doing now? And I told her about Folk, and she said, I want you to start and build my house. You know, we're thinking about buying a house, buying a block of land, and I want you to do it. So 2.5 years later, we're still building this house. And it's been an amazing journey. And even from that, it's been a lot of word of mouth. So we did her husband's office. I've done her sister's house in Adelaide. I do their friends' houses, and then from that just trickle on effects. So that was kind of how we started.
Yeah. And I think that's so often the case, and it's, I guess, why it's so important that, you know, you just try and get that first client, and it's a testament to you that then you've been given so many recommendations, you know, to sort of create the best possible work that you can. How were you worried about kind of designing a house? I mean, going from obviously doing perhaps smaller projects, like that's a lot to take on. Were you sort of nervous about that at all?
Of course. You know, I still get nervous with most projects, big and small, just because there's so much trust in me, of course, to make it a space that someone lives in every day. And it's such a big, I guess, there's so much trust that's given. And I'm always nervous still, but that project, and it's still our biggest project to date. I've learned so much. Doing a new build is huge, you know, but it'll be the most rewarding thing that we've done. We've chosen every single centimeter of this house, and every centimeter of it has been thought of. And it's going to be a really beautiful home. But yes, I was scared.
Yeah. And I think that's just part of the process as well. Like, I mean, I still kind of get that feeling when I take on projects, and I think that, you know, people can kind of resist that sometimes because they, you know, they're fearful, but that's actually when you grow the most, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. Yes. 100% when you're thrown in the deep end. And I think a lot of the time when you have to collaborate with other people, trades, architects, there's a lot of creative collaboration, which is always scary because you're like, what can I bring to this? But I think as women, we always sometimes step back and are a little bit fearful to step forward and put our hands up and say, hey, I've got an idea here. And that's something I'm always learning.
Yeah.
Just to speak up a little bit more and feel a bit more confident in my skills.
So can you share some of the things that you've learned on this particular project?
Yeah. Oh, so many. I think for this particular project, we've learned a lot about, I guess, collaborating. So most of the time when we do projects, we project manage them. And, you know, we have our trades as well and people we feel really comfortable with. So just to, I guess, delegate and having that open line of communication with all these different builders that we've never used, and all these different trades and suppliers and architects, that's something that was really tricky at the beginning to kind of coordinate and manage. But it's obviously paid off because we've got such a creative, great team of people. I've learned a lot from them.
Yeah. And just, I guess, I often like to sort of get a little bit technical with asking these questions because so many people are at the beginning of their journey and I think they find it really helpful. So when you're dealing with trades and builders and you're sort of trying to communicate, So how do you go about that? Like, are you, do you create a very clear brief to them? And what do you include in it? What do you find works to kind of really get a clear message across to people?
Yeah, sure. What I found is, I mean, some people are either visual and they like to see renders, or they like to see mood boards and concepts, and other people work more 2D and like to see spreadsheets and documentation. And of course, you need both of those things, but it's trying to figure out what is going to be the clearest line of communication for all these different people. And so what I found is just provide everything. Because you don't know these people particularly well, sometimes it's best to create presentations and documents that are visual, that are heavy with spreadsheets and Excel and renders and all of the above, so that everything is really clear and nothing's missed. Because if you just assume that that person thinks like you and that the idea will come across visually, well, then, you know, a lot of the time trades and builders don't think that way. And so you really do have to kind of rethink the way that you present things.
And what about talking to trades? How do you, do you feel comfortable with that?
Yeah. Do you know, that's funny. I get that question a lot. My stepdad was a builder. My partner, my husband, he is a builder. I'm so used to being around trades, and I'm also, they also tell me, like, Mariah, don't say that. It's the wrong terminology. And so I've really adapted how I can communicate to trades. But it is difficult. And I think, again, it's quite difficult for women sometimes, and also being an interior designer is sometimes looked down on with trades, and sometimes architects, it's, you know, we're seen as people that fluff cushions. So you do have to prove yourself, and it's difficult, but you get used to it. And, you know, I luckily for me, I'm around a lot of trades all the time.
That's definitely an asset, I think. Yeah, definitely. And so can you talk through some of the other projects that you've worked on? Like I mentioned, I really loved what you created within that space in Chippendale. It was a very small apartment, and we'll share a link with that in the show notes. But maybe you could just talk a little bit about some of the sustainable ideas and really trying to maximize a small space. Can you just talk through a few of the tips and things that you learned from that project?
Yeah, well, yeah, talking particularly about Chippendale, I guess for me it was creating a space that felt minimal, that also utilized natural materials, and everything was lifted off the floor as well to utilize that floor space and make the space feel bigger. But everything that was in there had to be fully considered. And what was its use? Was it visually appealing as well? Because it's such a small space, everything had to be curated and work with one another. So with that space, everything was kind of customized. I mean, the sofa being the main part, it was built around. There was a funny angle on the wall, and it was built around that wall, and also the level of comfort was customized for the client. But they really wanted to utilize local makers as well. So we really reached out to all my contacts of people that were in Sydney to eliminate transport costs and things as well. And we used, all my makers really, and said, you know, I know you don't create this kind of thing, but can you create this for this space, and how are we going to do this, and what's the process going to look like? Everything was very collaborative for this particular project.
No, it's great. And that's, there's a fun little video on your website as well, which I'll try and share a link to that as well. And I loved also the one you did in, I think it was DY, there was a cafe, and you had some like leather seats, which I really, they were really beautiful. So can you share, like, how did that project come about, and what were some of the lessons that you learned, or what were you trying to achieve with that space?
Yeah, awesome. That's actually, it's in Manly. And what we were trying to achieve in that space is basically the brief was to sit more people and make it feel light and airy. And really, I guess it was right on the beach in Manly, so it really needed to have a little bit of a coastal feel to it and feel fresh and bright. previously they could only sit five people in that cafe, so it really wasn't working for him. And he'd owned this cafe for 30 years and had never really reinvented it. So it was just basically we were able to actually sit 25 people in the end there, and it was a lot of playing around with the layout and the floor plan. That was probably the most difficult part of that project, because we weren't actually touching the kitchen area. We really had to utilize the floor space that we had. And so that was the biggest, brief given was to be able to seat more people. But we really wanted it to feel comfortable and bright and fresh. And we did that by introducing a lot of plants and natural materials, like the timber and the textured white wall and the leather.
And obviously, like that kind of curved effect with the sofa, I mean, I'm presuming that you're the seating, that you hadn't created that sort of thing before. Did you create things to scale, yeah, or do you have to kind of just take that leap of faith that it's going to turn out as you hope it will?
A little bit of both. I mean, we have an amazing upholsterer that we work with, and it's a lot of sketches and documenting that. But we wanted to create upholstery that mimicked, as cheesy as it sounds, the waves and kind of this organic fluidness of the area being on the beach. So that was kind of how we could introduce that coastal feel without it actually feeling and looking coastal. And we wanted to create some texture and a point of difference for the space, and it really came from the upholstery.
Yeah, no, it was great. And so how did that project come about? Did the client approach
again,
you?
Word of mouth. Yeah, he did. Funnily enough, I got a coffee from him every single morning for 3 years. It was my go-to coffee place. And he messaged me one day and said, "Mariah, I need you to do the space." He's the most relaxed guy, and he just gave me free rein.
Awesome. And I love the fact that as well, that sometimes I feel that people don't always see the value in interior design, but just by you sort of saying that he went from being able to seat five people to 25, like that's a huge like profit gain for him, you know, so there's that investment. Yeah. And yeah, it's I think that interior design can not only just impact how we live, but can also impact, particularly if you're a commercial business, the amount of people you can get into your shop or your cafe or restaurant or, you know, and how long they stay and, you know, all of those things. So, yeah. It's really quite powerful.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's always worth getting a fresh set of eyes on things.
Definitely. And so can you just run us through your process when you get a brief, then what is the process that you go through? And can you also just share a little bit of an insight into, like, you know, what kind of software you use and like the whole thing, you know, so, because like I said, the people who are going to be listening to this are very much, you know, either creating their own homes or interior designers themselves, maybe at the beginning of their career. So yeah, it'd be really great if you can give a bit of an insight.
No worries. Things have been moving really fast for folk at the moment in terms of our design process because we have been so busy. So things have had to be modified. But basically what we're doing at the moment is we'll always do a walkthrough. So as soon as we're approached, we'll do, I guess, a design consult and just get a feel for the space and a feel for the person as well and how they live in that space. So it's basically just getting photos, measuring up, getting the sketches and just looking at little things around the home to get a feel of how that person lives. It's not necessarily giving any ideas about the space because I feel like it takes me a while to see all of this, go back to the office and really think about it rather than giving all these ideas on the spot because it just doesn't work for me that way. So once we've had a look at the space, things move pretty fast from there. There's a little bit of back and forth with the client of exactly what they want and just kind of narrowing that down and then coming up with a concept and a mood board. And we usually just send that. So it's just a brief, it's a presentation, it's a mood board, it's a concept, and we get to see, I guess, what they think about that.
And what do you create what do you create that on? Do you use like InDesign or what?
InDesign.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, we use InDesign for that. And it's usually only about 3 to 4 pages. It's really brief. Once we get feedback from that, then we modify the concept and the mood board. And then we go into actually specifying particular products. So we give 3 to 4 options per product. So let's say it's a bathroom. We will do 3 or 4 tile options for a feature tile. And then we may do 3 or 4 options for the floor tile, and so on, tapware, vanity. So it's really just breaking it all down. And everything has an image, everything has a price, and everything has a link. And that's just so it's really user-friendly for people. They can click into the link, they can have a look at the product, and get a little bit more information. And then once that's sent off, usually that's room by room. So it's depending on if it's a whole house or it's a single room. And then it may take, someone might go, great, I love all of those options. What are your favorites? Or someone might be a little bit more particular and say, you know, can you talk me through this? Can you talk me through this? Let's amend this. And then we may do 2 or 3 revisions depending on the client. So that's usually from the time we do a site visit to the time that that document is sent is about a 2-week turnaround. So once we have refined that concept and those particular products and things, it's then when we start doing more of the technical drawings and layout planning and understanding exactly how the space will look. And that usually takes about 2 weeks as well. The programs that we use for that are AutoCAD and then Revit.
Okay, yeah. And do you do you charge for the walkthrough that you do at the start? And do you like to prefer to work on an hourly rate, or do you kind of charge, like give a kind of a project cost?
We don't charge for walkthroughs unless it's just a one-off design consultation, because that person feels confident moving forward and that's been, I guess, communicated at the beginning. Then that's charged. But if it's something that somebody wants, you know, a whole project and they want to use our services, the first walkthrough is complimentary. And then in terms of payment hourly or more of a quote, we like to work on a quote basis. We don't usually charge hourly. We used to, but we've moved on from that. And I think it's just a lot easier in terms of, for us, instead of continually sending invoices, and I guess cutting down that that experience of always asking for money, which is completely fine, but we find that it's just a little bit clearer and a little bit smoother in terms of the design process if it's just a one-off payment.
Yeah, and I guess you also have a better sense of like how long this process takes you, so you can kind of estimate that and kind of build that into your cost pricing and
Exactly. It's not something you can really do, I guess, at the beginning. You do need to understand how long a space will take.
Yeah. And so then how do you and Chris work together then? What are your kind of individual roles within the business? Do you work together on each project, or do you do separate projects?
A little bit of both. So Chris has separate projects, with some projects we're working on together, some that I'm just working on by myself. Chris is more of the back end man. He does all of our schedules, the documentation, and then I'm more of front of house. I do a lot of the site visits and the client meetings, and more of the conceptual design.
Yeah. Okay. And so did you say that you've now got somebody else in your team? Is your team grown?
Yeah, it's just started. It's growing. I feel like at this point we probably need more people again, which is really exciting. And she's awesome. She's a new graduate and she studied residential interior design and got her bachelor degree and reached out to us. She's awesome. She's helped so much. If you forget how fast people are on the computer when they've just studied, you know, they know the programs back to front.
Yeah, yeah. That's always, I feel like, a big moment in a business when you take on your first hire, that it allows you so much more freedom. But how do you manage that? Like, do you, are you able to let go of certain things, or has that been a challenge?
Yeah, it's something I'm really working on, is just asking for help and delegating. It hasn't been as hard as I thought. I think I was really at that point that, you know, we really needed help. So it's actually been quite natural just to ask for help and give her certain jobs. I think at this point I'm not ready to, I guess, let go of client meetings. I love catching up with my clients and a lot of my clients feel like friends in some ways. And so for me, there's still a lot that I do in the business. And I guess for small businesses, you take on so many things, marketing, website, Instagram, clients, and so many things. So I think I'll be doing that for still quite a long time. But it's nice to be able to give somebody else a little bit of the load of work. So
yeah, I mean, your website is really beautiful. Is that something that you outsourced?
No, Chris has actually got a bit of a background in graphic design and he's awesome at that. So he did most of the website and manages most of that still.
Oh, you're lucky to have that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, yeah, such a big part of the business. And so I guess what's next for Folk? You know, like what are your projects are you working on at the moment and what's important for you as you, I guess, grow as a studio? What, I guess, are your, you know, the principles or the core values of your design practice?
Yeah. So for what's next for Folk, we have our biggest year yet. We have like a lot of projects on. So I'm really excited to see those evolve and see what the end product is for those. So it's really just, I guess, this new build as well. That'll be finished this year. So it's getting all these projects over the line, looking amazing, and I guess making the clients happy. So that's our biggest goal for this year. And I think then also growing the team. And also, I guess, getting projects outside of Sydney. We do have quite a few at the moment and we had quite a lot of US projects last year. So I guess growing that as well, I would love to do more US projects and more international projects. And I think for us, because of COVID and the ability to be able to Zoom and do things virtually, we really had to get better at that and we really nailed that last year. And so I think that we can continue that this year. I don't think COVID's going away anytime soon, unfortunately. And I guess for us, keeping with all of our belief systems at Folk, our practices, and also still being passionate about smaller projects and not always just focusing on the bigger projects and the ones that, you know, are the new builds, but also if somebody wants just their bathroom done, still getting that excitement there and that passion to know that you're really changing the way someone lives in their day to day. So I think for a small company, keeping those small values as well.
Yep. And I was going to ask you as well about, so when you're doing these international projects, how do you go about then, I guess, working with their like suppliers there, you know, that side of things? Has that been a big learning curve, sort of educating yourself on different suppliers?
Yeah, it's huge. Luckily for our US clients, a lot of them had their favorite suppliers that they would share with me. But there was a lot of research that had to get done and a lot of, I guess, changing dimensions on the spot from inches to millimeters was always really difficult to do. But yeah, there's definitely challenges with suppliers, but luckily, of course, the internet is amazing and it's pretty easy nowadays to find people in that area, makers, trades and so on. But yeah, it's a lot of work.
Yeah. And so how did they find you? Was that through Instagram and social media?
Yeah, I find that our Instagram is the main, I guess, our main reach. It's our main form of communication. We do put quite a lot of effort into marketing on Instagram and we get a lot of people messaging us and I think from there emailing us as well. So it's really awesome.
Yeah. Can you just share a little bit about Instagram and using it? Because I think it's one of the most important tools kind of within any kind of small business toolkit to communicate with people, to share your work. Can you share a little bit about, I guess, how you choose to show up on Instagram, like what you choose to share, you know, like what you choose to say, the tone of your voice and the way that you kind of write your captions, but also do you plan in advance and what kind of tools do you use if you do that type of thing?
Sure. We definitely do plan things in advance. So we usually collect quite a lot of different imagery and we like to have a mix of our own projects and then projects that inspire us as well as furniture pieces that inspire us. So we kind of like to have a little bit of a mix in there. So we often do a monthly plan. We don't use any app. I know there's many out there, but we do it the old school way. We have all the images on our phones usually, and we have a grid system, and we just see what works nicely. Make sure we don't have too many of our own projects and then too many of other projects. So we like to do it that way and do it that visually. Sometimes I steer off that path if I see a really beautiful image, and Chris is like, Mariah, stay on the plan. But yeah, usually it's all planned out. We like to keep our captions a little bit short, and I guess we probably don't put as much thought into our captions as the actual imagery, but I think for us at the moment we've been really focusing on our stories and sharing kind of behind the scenes of the projects and the process, which is something I always forget to do. Because, of course, we love a good before and after photo, but then what happens in between that? So I'm just trying to capture that a little bit more and share that.
And do you have a particular time of day that you always try and post, or are you sort of more fluid than that, I guess?
I think I'm a little bit more fluid than that. I wish I wasn't, but no, it's a little bit more fluid.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's just...
It's when I've got the time, I guess, basically, at the moment.
Yeah, and that's the thing, isn't it? And would you ever imagine that you would outsource that, or do you actually enjoy doing that side of the business?
Mm. I really enjoy it, and I think it's a really clear extension of Chris and I, and I'd find it really difficult for somebody to come on board and take over that. So I think we'll always do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I've got some questions here for you. They're sort of like quick, whatever comes to mind first. And this is how we always end these interviews. And I just think it's a fun way to get a little bit more of an insight into you and your journey and where you're hoping to go. So we'll get straight into them. So the first one is, which five words best describe you? So just whatever first comes to mind.
Okay. I think I'm really ambitious, determined, quite strong. I'm always told I'm quite bubbly, and I think patient.
What's the best life or career lesson you've learnt?
Ask for help.
Oh, that's a good one. What's your proudest career achievement?
I think in terms of my career in design, folk has been my proudest achievement. And I think just seeing it continually grow is, I'm always in awe of it.
Yeah. What's been your best decision?
I think marrying my husband and starting folk. It's two answers.
Who inspires you?
Oh, that's a hard one. I think for me, I grew up with my nan, my sister, and my mum and my stepdad, but I had three really strong women in my household that really grounded me and pushed me, but they also inspire me. So I'd say those three.
Yeah. And what are you passionate about?
I'm passionate about working sustainably and consciously, not only in my personal life, but also in my career.
What dream do you still want to fulfill?
I have so many, and I can't imagine not dreaming. So many. There's many things on the horizon for folk, and also in terms of, I guess, we're trying to build folk into, you know, accommodation and other things as well, not just an interior design experience.
Sounds like fun. What are you reading at the moment?
I'm actually reading the Michelle Obama book.
Interesting. I want to get that. I still haven't read it. So that looks like a good one. Are you listening to any podcasts at the moment?
Yes, I listen to Plant Proof podcast, which is just about living a more, I guess, conscious life. I'm vegan, so it's basically about that. And also the Minimalist podcast, which is about living a minimal life, I guess.
Yeah, great. And what piece of advice would you give to your younger self?
slow down a little bit and enjoy the process. I think for me, I'm always like on the go and I just think about the end result, but enjoying the process a little bit more.
Great. Thank you so much, Mariah. It's been so much fun to talk to you and learn about your process and your journey with Folk. And I definitely think that it's going to be fun to watch your journey. I think that you're going to have many great projects ahead of you. So and maybe other things too. So thanks.
Yeah, hopefully. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, everyone. I hope that you've enjoyed this interview and learning more about Mariah's creative journey. And don't forget that if you'd love to design and decorate your own home with clarity and confidence, I have a free training for you this week only. Just go to nataliewalton.com/3steps to design your home to register now. That's nataliewalton.com/3steps to design your home. All of the links and info you need to access for this episode are at nataliewalton.com/podcast. Thank you to Jaeger Media for producing this podcast and the people of the Bundjalung Nation where it was recorded. I look forward to connecting again soon. I'm Natalie Walton and you've been listening to Imprint.